We pick up now where we left off in our series of homilies on the theology of the body. John Paul II finds a second piercing insight, which we are calling a second syllable. Meditating on the first word of Christ, where Jesus returns to Genesis 1 and 2, namely, original unity. Original unity. Even though we're still struggling to pronounce the first syllable, called original solitude, let us add the second syllable of original unity. Like original solitude, the true meaning of this second syllable will also surprise us. In order to present the full richness of original unity, the Pope combines two Genesis texts. First, he considers Genesis chapter 1, verse 27, which reads, "So God created man in his image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them." But John Paul finds original unity also expressed in Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, which states, "Therefore, a man leaves his father and his mother and clings to his wife, and they become one flesh." In other words, the Pope insists that the image of God expressed in Genesis chapter 1, verse 27, chiefly resides in the one flesh union of husband and wife described in Genesis 2:24. John Paul explains why he combines these two texts and sounds out this second syllable. He states, "Man becomes an image of God not so much in the moment of solitude as in the moment of communion. He is, in fact, from the beginning, not only an image in the solitude of one person, but also and essentially the image of an inscrutable divine communion of persons. In this way, the second account, Genesis 2:24, could also prepare for understanding the Trinitarian concept of the image of God, even if image appears only in the first account, Genesis 1:27. We Christians do not believe that God is a solitary loner, like some lone ranger galloping through eternity, but rather a loving communion of three divine persons, Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. Human beings become, therefore, an image of God, not primarily when we stand alone, but rather when we come together, as the Beatles sang. But we become this divine mirror never more perfectly than when husband and wife unite in sexual intimacy. The Pope states this explicitly. The unity about which Genesis chapter 2, verse 24 speaks, "and the two shall become one flesh," is without doubt the unity that is expressed and realized in the conjugal act. You know, Scott Hahn once quipped that the two become one, and the one is so real that 9 months later, you have to give it a name. You have a baby. The two become three. By the way, can you see how the Pope is already laying the philosophical and theological groundwork to refute the modern arguments in favor of contraception? The Holy Father is very much like the brilliant lawyer Atticus Finch in Harper Lee's classic To Kill a Mockingbird. How so? Well, with these three words of Christ, so far we have only learned two syllables of Christ's first word, John Paul is slowly building his case. And in the final section of the theology of the body, he unveils his closing arguments against contraception. John Paul even provides this foreshadowing writing. This unity through the body and the two will become one flesh possesses a multiform dimension, an ethical dimension, as is confirmed by Christ's response to the Pharisees in Matthew 19, and also a sacramental dimension. That is, when you understand human sexuality as a reflection of God's love, where two become three, some options like contraception suddenly sound odious. Not just wrong, but blasphemous. Let me draw out two practical implications of the second syllable of original unity and see what it sounds like when we say it out loud. I have recently been reading Skylar Baylar's book called He, She, They. Skylar was born female, but underwent a sex change in order to present herself as a male. Skylar wrote about some of her childhood challenges. "When I was in kindergarten," she says, "each of my classmates and I were paired with what the school called a buddy. Your buddy was supposed to be the same gender as you. So because I was not out as transgender at the time, my buddy was a girl. I was fairly disappointed when I learned this. There was nothing wrong with my buddy, but I didn't understand why I had to be paired with someone based on gender. But it quickly became apparent to me that gender was one of the most important categories in life, at least to those around me." The Pope would certainly be one of those people around who believe that gender is one of the most important categories in life. The Pope, however, does not believe gender is merely a category, but rather it is constitutive of being human, part of our human core. He writes, "Precisely the function of sex, that is, being male or female, which in some way is constitutive for the person, not only an attribute of the person, shows how deeply man, with all his solitude, with the uniqueness and unrepeatability proper to the person, is constituted by the body as he or she, not he, she, they. That is, femaleness or maleness determines the impervious psychosomatic structure of each human person, whose complementarity as male and female forms the basis of original unity, which, when the two become one and thus three, marvelously mirrors the Holy Trinity." At one point in Skylar Baylar's book, she almost agrees with John Paul II. Unexpectedly, she explains why she chose not to have her uterus and ovaries removed, euphemistically termed middle surgery. She admits, "So I have not discarded the prospect of having children with my own body and would need these organs in order to do so. Though many trans men might feel a disconnect with their internal reproductive organs, I feel the opposite. My uterus and surrounding parts are symbolic of where I came from, and I cherish this," she says. You know, when I was growing up in Little Rock, there was a Mexican restaurant called El Chico down the street. At the time, as a little boy, I just figured that El Chico was some random name for a restaurant. But later, when I learned to speak Spanish, I discovered that El Chico means the small boy. In other words, I was saying words I did not fully understand yet. So too, Skylar Baylor, by keeping her reproductive organs, is saying the words original unity, although she does not know what these syllables mean yet. But one day, she will learn this language. In a sense, Skylar gets the answer right, but for the wrong reasons. John Paul II, on the other hand, gives the right reasons for keeping reproductive organs in a veritable ode to motherhood. The Pope Saint says, "The whole exterior constitution of woman's body, its particular look, the qualities that stand with the power of perennial attraction, are in strict union with motherhood, with the simplicity characteristic to it, the Bible, and later the liturgy following it, honors and praises throughout the centuries the womb that bore you and the breasts from which you sucked milk." Luke chapter 11, verse 17. He goes on, "These words are a eulogy of motherhood, of femininity, of the feminine body in its typical expression of creative love." When I meet with engaged couples for marriage preparation, I tell them that a woman's body is a walking miracle. That always puts a big smile on the girl's face. And I explain, because in her womb is the cradle of life. Every human life is a miracle. The miracle of potentially being a mirror of the Most Holy Trinity. Each in their own way, Pope Saint John Paul II and Skylar Baylor appreciate the depth of the meaning of the female body. But the Pope also understands why. By his penetrating analysis of these two Genesis texts, chapter 1, verse 27, chapter 2, verse 24, the Pope takes us far below the level of earthly existence and reveals new and glorious depths. Following the Pope's contemplation of both the Bible and the body, we have learned to articulate now two syllables of the first word of Christ, namely, original solitude and original unity. Praise to be Jesus Christ.